Welcome to Gervie's Law. I'm Lauren Saban. Alan Gervie will be joining us momentarily. We are having some trouble getting him on the line, but he will be here soon. And when he gets on the line, I'm sure he'll be in a great mood because of all the technical difficulties we've had trying to get a hold of him. Coming up on this show, we're going to be speaking to Raoul Felder, a famed attorney. We're going to be talking about the life of Jackie Mason. And we're also going to be talking to Alan Gervie about where he is and why and all the things that are... Is he on the line? Is this him talking? Oh, no, not yet. Okay. In the meantime, you have me to keep you company here.
Am I here? Am I there?
Oh, there you are, Alan.
No way. I can't believe it.
Finally. Welcome.
What the heck?
Welcome to your own show.
Welcome to my own show. I want to thank Genevieve Wong, who's an amazing producer, who did such a great job to make sure that I was going to be on the air, but it's KBC that just can't get it right. I don't understand it. We've been doing this show for 8.5 years, and they can't get me on my own show. Technology, amazing.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But you know what, Lauren?
Yes?
We're going to get past this. We are going to get past
We always do, Alan.
We always do. Are you hearing an echo at all, or is that just me?
It's a slight echo. It's nothing I can't work with.
What year is it? Is it 2021?
I believe so, yes.
Check it out. Google it.
According all to right. the Google, it is 2021.
You know, we need to get to our guests. I hope they got Raoul Felder on the line, because this is an exciting show, Lauren. Raoul
Raoul personally, yes?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I'm about to meet him
Gotcha.
Not in person, but he is one of the world's best known and most powerful lawyers. He is known as the King of Divorce, and that was by GQ and Forbes. Has GQ ever called you anything, Lauren?
I've never been the anything in GQ, no. Unfortunately. Okay. How about you, Alan?
I think they called me a stud once, but it wasn't GQ. The guy's name was Jerry Queen. It was a guy that I grew up with. He called me a stud. Captain Divorce by Vanity Fair, Duke of Divorce by People Magazine. He's one of the 100 most powerful lawyers in America. He's a who's who in America. He has written 9 books, and he was a successful prosecutor and assistant U.S. attorney before he became a divorce attorney extraordinaire. His clients have included just a potpourri of celebrities, well-known people, and not-so-well-known people. But, of course, he represented Mayor Rudy Giuliani, Robin Givens, Carol Channing, and the spouses of, listen to this list, Taylor. I know you are. Elizabeth Taylor, Liza Minnelli, Johnny Cochran, Anthony Quinn, Tom Clancy, Patrick Ewing, Martin Scorsese, and so many others.
Wow.
What a career, and we are going to speak to him today about his life and his career, but first we want to talk to him about Jackie Mason, because Raoul Felder was probably Jackie Mason's best friend. They spent so much time together, and unfortunately, Jackie passed away this past Saturday, July 31st, and he was one of my favorites. I grew up watching him and laughing. Lauren, you're from New York. You must have been a fan of Jackie Mason.
I'm a huge fan of Jackie Mason. I've met him multiple times. His brothers performed the bris for all of my male cousins, which if you're Jewish, knows, you know, that's...
No way.
Yeah. All of his brothers were moles.
His brother was a mole?
Yes. Yes.
Oi. I didn't know that. I mean, he was a rabbi, so they had a rabbi and a mole. What knockers?
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow, we got to get Raoul on the phone because he knows more about Jackie Mason than anyone. Raoul Felder, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Is he on the line? No, not yet. Okay.
Oh, my
goodness.
He's
not on the line yet.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I know, Alan. I can feel the heat coming from the other side of the line here.
What the heck is going on there? What is going on?
It's just one of those days.
And no one is texting me and letting me know. For those of you who are just joining us, Lauren and I are in separate locations. We're not together. That happens a lot. I think Kevin and Bean did their show for about 50 years. And
I think
they
did
in
too.
In two separate locations. And
it keeps it keeps it exciting, right, Alan?
I guess. I'm not even, I'm not even getting any text messages from them. Do we know where Raul is?
I believe we do have his number. I think it's just a matter of getting him on the phone.
Okay.
I think they've made a couple of attempts.
All right, so let's get Genevieve, because I just gave Genevieve all the props in the world because she's such a great producer, but apparently she, you know, we're having trouble
getting
Raul on the line.
Point fingers at anyone. Oh, I think we have him, Alan.
No. Raul, are you there?
Raul?
No. Raul. Mr. Felder. No, he's not there.
Oh,
he missed
my
that
goodness.
incredible introduction. How is it possible that, you know, when someone is going to introduce you that way?
I know, and you don't even get the amazing intro.
You know, Lauren, I know when Alan Dershowitz was introduced on our show, he told me that he was going to take the recording and play it every morning when he got up to motivate him to get through the day.
Because it's that good, right?
Yeah, it's because there's so much said. I think Jerry Spence said that he wished his parents were alive because he would have played it for them to tell them what kind of a success he had become. Because Alan Gervie said so in his introduction.
I mean, these are introductions that go down in history. I mean, no one has ever come on this show and complained about it.
No.
They walk away glowing.
In fact, most people say that I know more about them than they know about themselves.
You do your research. I will hand you that. You know more about people than they know about themselves.
Lauren, I'm a
lawyer.
What?
Just like baseball, what? Alan... Let's give it a third try.
Let's see
if he's on the phone.
Three strikes and you're out.
Yeah.
Is Raul on the line now?
Yes, I'm here.
Here he is.
Oh, Raul, we've been talking about you for 5 minutes. We gave you the most incredible introduction, thinking that you were on the line. We told everyone that you were the GQ called you the King of Divorce, and Captain Divine was Vanity Fair's name for you, Duke of Divorce. We talked about you being one of the 100 most powerful lawyers in America. And then we talked about all of your clients. I think we named about 35 clients, household names. Everyone was so amazed by the fact that you've had such an illustrious career as one of the greatest lawyers in the country and in the world. And then we also mentioned the sad
part. It sounds like a eulogy, right?
it wasn't a eulogy. It was something that we said your parents would be so proud. The nachas that they would schlep from you, from hearing about everything, you know, and I was telling Lauren, Alan Dershowitz was on the show not too while ago, and he said, I play the introduction that Alan Gervie gave me every day just to motivate me. So we are very happy to have you, and I know that we're going to talk, before we talk about your career and some of the interesting stories and the books, your books are incredible. We want to talk about Schmucks too, and that's a book, by the way, not just a lot of people that we know.
It might be a description of us, yes.
That's right.
But Lauren was saying, so we're going to talk first about the unfortunate passing of Jackie Mason, and we know that you had a special relationship every Saturday night. You would have dinner with him and his wife, Jill. You would go to, you know, Queens, which you would never go to Queens, but for Jackie. He would pay for your meal. For 30 years, he kept saying, you'll pay next week. And, you know, next week never came. But, you know, we want to talk a little bit about that before we get into you and your career. And Lauren was saying, and I didn't know this, that Jackie's brother was the moil for her what is it,
all my cousins, kids? Yes, all of their breasts.
Yeah.
How is it possible for they have a moil and a rabbi in one family? Boy.
Yeah, well, they have many rabbis in that family.
Multiple, yeah.
If Jackie knew when they started coming over, certain kind of person starts coming over to him in a restaurant, Jackie used to whisper, he's going to tell me that my brother was the moil for Sedgley. You know, a lot of people don't know what a moil is. Yeah. It's the unkindest cut of all, yeah.
So his brothers also had fame on some level from their work as well.
Yes.
That is really something. How did you two become so close? Because I know you called him, one of the greatest minds, and he was a shooting star that comes every 100 years. He had a Talmudic outlook on life. You two really meshed, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I met him 35 years ago, or maybe more. He was a star on Broadway at the time. It was the world according to me. And I was looking in the window of the Carnegie Delicatessen. And he was looking at the window. And he looks at me, and I look at him. And he said, "I know you from somewhere." And I said, "I know you from somewhere, too." But anyway, he was I was with him on his deathbed this Saturday night when he died. Anyway, and it was a long journey and one of the saddest nights of my life. But we had a lot of fun together. As you probably know, comedians are not funny usually when they're off stage. But he was naturally funny, and he started arguments all the time. And this was the Talmudic training, I think. Socrates did the same thing, too. He was also Jewish. But no matter what you said, he would take the other side, and he would argue. And he had statistics all made up. 78.5. What happened is, over the years, we did some radio shows together, and then with the internet, we had one show where the station was in Omaha or something. It was a series of radio stations, and he started one of these things of 5,065 people in for 72.85%. And they say, "Wait a second, we looked it up. None of this is true." So after that, he calmed down a little bit. But as far as statistics, he did calm down as far as life. He was tremendously energetic. He had three shifts. Three shifts. And I lasted for one of them, usually. And then he had a new crew come on. Then he went to another delicatessen or another coffee shop, whatever was open. He had a, as I'm talking to him, thinking many things. We were in Europe. Many times we were in Europe together. And he was a big star in London, in England. As big as America, maybe even bigger. He got huge crowds. And, I think the genesis of that was, you know, they have a Royal Command performance for the Queen's Trust every year.
Mm-hmm.
And he did four of them. And he hated it because there's so many stars on. And then at the end of the show, it was supposed to be a big honor. They had a member of royalty, sometimes the Queen, sometimes the Queen Mother, sometimes Prince Philip, was to sponsor the show. And then you'd line up and... you'd shake hands with the person and you'd bow, and it was ridiculous. But anyway, I was there once with him, he said, "Oh, hell with it." Not that politely. He said, "I'm not going to stand in line like a schmuck." And he left. Well, it was a big story in Britain. So he had a manufacturer saying he had the flu. He came on to, even with the flu and stuff, it was a big honor. He didn't want to disappoint anybody, and then the newspapers were much kinder. But what I still actually said, my mind went off. The reason I think was the starting point, the precipitating point when he became so famous in Britain was the Queen Mother. Not the Queen, but the Queen Mother said he was her favorite comedian when she was interviewed. And I don't think she understood a word that he was saying.
I gotta ask you more about that, Raul. Yeah. We gotta take a quick break here. Raul Felder, famed attorney, as well as good friend of Jackie Mason, remembering him tonight. Alan, we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Gervie's Law. I'm Lauren Saban. Alan Gervie is joining us from
When I got to hear this. I love this song.
Oh.
This brings back memories.
Oh, to me too.
Yes. Oh, really? Raul, this brings back memories for you. Yes. What a shock, right?
Well, of course, my brother wrote that song and 1,500 others.
And
actually, I have it as a ringtone on my cell phone.
Oh, you do? What, this magic moment?
This magic moment, yeah.
I got to ask you, Raul, yes. How did he come up with the name Doc Pomus? He's such a well-known writer, and what a life he had.
He was trying to think of a name. First of all, he was a embarrassment in the neighborhood because he was a blues singer before he became a songwriter. And so he wanted to get a name that would reflect back on the neighbors and the family. So somehow he devised this name. There was a whole world known by this name. He lived on West 72nd Street, and his daughter, who, funny enough, I had dinner with her last night, she met the Beatle lived in this house, apartment house, where he ultimately was killed. John Lennon, I think.
Yeah.
He was ultimately shot. So when she said to him, she introduced herself, said, my father's a songwriter. And he didn't know her. So he said, what's his name? She told him the name. He said, he's not a songwriter. He's a poet. It was very nice.
The film, a.k.a. Doc Pomus, is an amazing film. It's so interesting.
His daughter was
Sharon.
The guiding force there, yeah. And it was got all kinds of awards and well-received. And the trajectory of his life is an amazing one. First of all, when we were brought up, he was handicapped, and so he was sort of an outcast being handicapped, but enormously intelligent. We had a little signed article blurb from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, and apparently that year they decided to use intelligence tests, IQ tests, in public schools. And the heading of us, Brooklyn Boy Aces IQ Test, highest in Brooklyn. And that was my brother. Very smart. But he loved me blues. He became a blues singer. And everyone in the house, every friend he had was black. From the time I was brought up, there was a black guy sleeping in the living room, a black guy in the middle of the night eating at the kitchen, during the days playing the piano. But I remember I must have been 5 years old, and some other kid said to me, some derogatory term about the black people of the house, and I remember not understanding what he was saying. There's a lesson in there because I didn't think of them as being different. Rodgers and Hampstead had a sort of, you have to be carefully taught to be prejudiced or whatever the popular phrase is. And I remember that was a shock to me. And I went back to my mother and I said, what does he mean by saying that? Because to me, they weren't strange. I mean, these are the people who lived in my apartment.
Didn't you share a room with your brother for like 21 years?
Yeah,
and he was, 14 years older than you?
Till I left to Switzerland, that means I was over 20. He was not married yet from the day I was born. And he was at one end of the room, sleeping in one end of the room. I was sleeping at the other end of the room. And he was up all night and went to bed during the day. And because he was handicapped, he was mostly in bed. And I got in the habit of staying in bed, too. And it's been my curse because I can't sleep at night. I sleep 3 hours a night. And every time I went to the sleep specialist, they said, well, part of the trick is you don't go to bed till you're very tired. You don't stay in bed. I could never break the habit. I read in bed. I eat in bed. I watch television in bed. This is 70 years later. More than 70 years. But then there were, because of bedridden, they created games, paper games involving dice, throwing dice. He imitated the roar of the crowd. It was a sort of football game we created. We threw footballs between my bed and his bed. He was very, very strong. I noticed that I collect old magazines, old-time magazines, and they wrote about Roosevelt, who was more handicapped than anybody believed. He could not walk a step by himself, but he hit it pretty well. And I remember Time magazine said Roosevelt was in the White House and sitting at his desk, and they spoke about his massive shoulders. Well, my brother had shoulders like this. His bicep was about a quarter of an inch less than Joe Louis's. He developed enormous of shoulders and head strength because he was in crutches all the time. He was not a lightweight. He was very powerful and he's very strong. Roosevelt was the same way, but Roosevelt was able to disguise be hairy, handicapped. Roosevelt took the attitude that the countries, he took it over when it was very bad shape, the Depression. He said the countries had so much trouble that they won't be able to deal with a leader who was handicapped himself.
Raul, you talk about the brilliant minds. You talk about Roosevelt. You talk about your brother. That these kind of disabilities didn't hold them back. I mean, how your brother flourished under these circumstances is really an incredible story.
It's amazing. He performed in all black clubs, and they appreciated him. And I remember going to the club several times with him. And I got older, he would take me. But for him to get to the clubs, he had to go on the subway. And that was an ordeal, unimaginable ordeal. Even when he was able to make money, we couldn't get taxis that would pick him up. They didn't. They were very cruel as far as handicapped. They didn't want to bother with him. And they didn't want to go into our neighborhood. It was a very bad neighborhood. And so I used to have to walk the four blocks of Broadway, Brooklyn. And
This is just such an incredible story about your brother. We want to hear more about it. Unfortunately, we got to take a quick break. So please hang out, Raul Felder. This is Gervie's Law. It's me, Lauren Savon, and Alan Gervie, coming right back after this. Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Alan?
I want to hear the main line of this song. Raul Felder is talking to us. Is this another one of your brother's songs?
Yes. That's Presley, right? Elvis?
Yeah, that's Elvis. Boy, so many people did it. And we don't want to spend the whole time talking about your brother, but it's really incredible. Fascinating. The Felders are fascinating. You know, a lot of people don't know that you've written about 9 books. Not only have you been a star in the courts and with so many celebrity clients, but you've written a number of books. I know you're kind of a Renaissance man, and some of the divorce books, The Good Divorce, about bare knuckle negotiation, and then you also wrote Schmucks. But I was going to talk about Dancers in the Dark Street, but let's first talk about Schmucks, our favorite. Those are the short stories. I want to get to that, but I want to first talk about Schmucks, our favorite, Fakes, Frauds, Lowlifes, Liars, The Armed and Dangerous, and Good Guys Gone Bad. That was a collaboration with Jackie Mason. How did that all come about, and how did you have, you know, the wherewithal to put a book together? Because it was very well reviewed. It has been, and if people haven't read it, it's a great read.
That particular book, HarperCollins came to us, and in those days you used to get big advances, and then you do audio books, which Jackie hated, hated the audio book. But he was performing Las Angeles at the time when he and I wrote the book, and I wrote some, and he wrote some, and then he would send it to me. But the only problem was this: I used to get these 3 or 4 pages, because they divided the short chapters about individual people. 3 or 4 or 5 pages without a period. period. Now, when you think about it, it sounds, you know, so what? But it's very hard to read.
Absolutely.
3 or 4 pages where you've got to figure out
where the
period. And every time I spoke to him, he said, "What's the difference?" He says, "I'm on a roll." He said, "You know, doesn't matter." In fact, I think at that time he was doing Chicken Soup. He was doing a sitcom, which he also hated. When it finally stopped, but we were just talking about it after he passed away with his wife Jill. When it was discontinued, when it was stopped, it got very good reviews. But he had Lynn Redgrave was his co-star. And people didn't like it. They thought his, particularly Jews, that thought his character was too Jewish.
Mm.
But when she came to tell him, Carsey wanted somebody, the producers called her up, tell him we have to discontinue. We're not going to continue with the show. Which, I don't know, it had 10 shows or whatever it is.
I actually remember the show. I liked it. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, everybody thought it was funny, but it wasn't ready for its time yet. The ethnic part of it was not ready for its time.
What do you think his legacy will be, Raul?
Oh, I really do think he would be, first of all, he was a unique individual. He will be spoken about for a long time. I saw the letters coming in from all over the world. It was even one from one of the Arab countries. I couldn't read it. There was nothing English in it. It showed it to me. And but he used to tell a story. He said, when he was on the stage, he said, and I even got an offer from an Arab country. They're going to pay me $25,000 to appear and a free funeral.
He got into a little bit of trouble when he talked about talking about driving the Arabs out of Israel if the killing doesn't stop.
Yeah, well, he was an equal opportunity abuser. He never had hatred in his heart. Even when he picks a person in the audience, they love to be picked. He had a long he didn't tell jokes, but he had a long story about Pakistani cab drivers or Indian cab drivers, and we got a letter they're gonna pick at the theater, and I remember Jill coming and said, "There's a lot of them out there." She said, "We got to deal with it some way. They're gonna pick at the theater." Well, they weren't picking at the theater. They were lining up to get tickets after the articles came out about this story. And every night for, I would say, 3 months, there was always a Pakistan or Indian contingent in the theater. They'd love it, the story about the it's a narrative that goes on that he had trouble with the cab driver, and the kid I told take down his name, and he said they all have the same name or something like that. And of course, The other thing about his humor was that it was the way he was talking and telling it. Because I read, somebody put out an edition of The World According to Me, or maybe it was the second show, I don't know. I think it was The World According to Me. And I had just met him around that time, so I read the book. It wasn't hysterical the way when you watch it on the stage it's hysterical.
Mm. Yeah.
He has like a body movement. He was a boxer when he was very young. Before he became a rabbi, he was a boxer.
Huh.
That was after he left Sheboygan.
Yeah, that's right. After Sheboygan.
He does kind of have the build for it. I kind of see that.
Yeah, he had four fights. He was very fast. And the first three fights, he won. They couldn't hit him. The fourth fight, the guy hit him in the nose. And that was the end of his boxing career. he became an authority on boxing, even still the day he died.
Wow.
The only thing is, he could not stand violence. He couldn't look at it. From what's the boxing? He had a collection of boxing tape. Who was the boxing tape? He could watch it up until somebody got hurt or was bleeding.
Wow.
And he always left the room. He was a strange combination of people. Yeah. It's unique.
How ironic was it that he passed away on the Saturday night when that was your night with him for the past 30 years?
Yes.
We send the condolences to you because we know how special that relationship was, and it has to be painful knowing that you're not going to have those Saturday nights that you always had with him and Jill
when Survivor, his wife and friends, we see each other every day almost. I stop on the way home. They do.
Yeah.
They play videotapes, but all of them have bring their own videotapes, and it's so very alive. Somebody said that he did one of these things. You press them, and it runs for Jackie talking four different things. I thoughts are coming back to me as I'm talking to you. When the iPad came out, not many people had it, but I had an iPad, and I had an idea. I put two of his Sullivan shows. Ed Sullivan was a big television presenter at the time. Sullivan shows on the iPad, and we're sitting in the Edison coffee shop. This shows up another very strange idea. But in the coffee shop, and we're having dinner, we're sitting around, and I said, Jackie, what do you think of this? And this is years after the Sullivan show. And he's looking at it, and I see he's entranced by it, like a child looking at it. And he's ignoring everybody else, ignoring the food on the table. And then I hear him say to himself, you know, I thought I was good. I never thought I was that good. And I thought being funny, but he wasn't. He was mesmerized by it. He was like a child.
Neil
Simon.
We're talking to Raoul Felder, just to let our listeners know, famed attorney, but also one of the dearest friends of Jackie Mason. We got to take another quick break, but when we come back, Raoul, more stories about the life of Jackie Mason. This is Gervie's Law with me, Lauren Savon, and Alan Gervie.
Yeah. Save the laugh, Dan. I think Jackie Mason saved the last dance for Raoul Felder, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what they say. By the way, Kennedy, he got an invitation to Kennedy's inauguration. The reason was, and there was a letter with it, was that Kennedy asked that at his inauguration, he wanted that song played, either at the beginning or end, I forgot. But it was too much of a problem. My brother sent back a note, but it was too much of a problem to get to Washington. But, you know, we were talking before about the Edison. Another strange experience. It's not funny that I had. Neil Simon wrote a play for Jackie. Jackie didn't want to do the play. So, but it opened on Broadway. It ran for a while. I forget the name of it. So Jackie one night said, you know, I think I want to finally go see it. So he waits, to run about a week or 2 weeks. And we go back. He said, I don't want to sit in the audience. People will see. Once it starts, I'll go there and we'll stay in the back and watch it. So it's me, he, and Jill, his wife. Well, what Neil Simon did, he hired a Jackie Mason imitator. It wasn't about Jackie Mason. It was the weirdest thing. And the guy was very good.
Did Jackie think he was very good?
No. That's what I thought I was going to say. So he sees it about 20 minutes. And it takes place at the Edison Cafe at a Broadway theater. It's about a Broadway show. But it has a different name. I think he had Jackie something other. And Jackie stayed a little while with us. Ugh, it stinks. And he walked out. He never mentioned it again. Which also triggered another thought when he was doing, this may not be funny things, but it's revealing. He was doing Chicken Soup, which he hated to do because they kept stopping and starting. And then they were doing a scene, and his co-star was Lynn Redgrave. And somebody said a couple of talking to the background of a big studio where they tape it. It looked like an airplane hangar. And somebody must have been talking, and Lynn Grady, I could hear her voice, said, this is like Piccadilly Circus. I can't perform like this. And Jackie says to me, sure to work in a nightclub, but if you have to compete with dishes and people, and people smoking
right.
and
That so sounds
good. It's a different eras, a different abilities of different performers. But he hated the movies, too.
Raul, it's so funny because as you're telling that story, I'm listening to you and you're saying, he's starting. It just brought back Jackie Mason, the way you said that, told that story. It's really something.
Well, by the way, it's contagious. If you stay with him too long, you end up talking like him. But, I mean, to go with him to a restaurant was an adventure because at some point in the dinner, you know, he'd get up and walk around and see what people were eating. I then ask them if they like it. Like it was his restaurant. And a number of the people, I'd say 20, 30% of the time, they invite him to sit down and he loves dinner. And he would be sitting in the dinner with strangers. And then he'd eat one course and then he'd leave him and so forth. And people would love it. They would say, I was having dinner with Jackie Mason. He got back there many times around. But he had other quirks, performing quirks. They couldn't put anything, ask him to hold anything, because he never let go. And that happened in Chicken Soup. They gave a pencil, and so he was supposed to be in the roof with Lynn Redgrave, and they gave a pencil for some reason, and he wouldn't let go. They had to keep taking the pencil out of his hand. And I had another experience with him with this. Before people had cell phones, you'd have to go into a telephone booth to make a call. And there were little tobacco shops around New York, I suppose, every big city at the time. So cigars, cigarettes, and so forth. And so we're walking up 8th Avenue after the show, and there's a beggar there with a tin cup. And Jackie is talking to him, and he's asking, you said you recognized me. How if you're a beggar? How you don't have a television set? How do you? He says, no, I got a television set. Anyway, so they're talking, and then this man with the tin cup says, listen, I want to go into the store, and I got to make a call. And he says, could you hold this for me, the cup? He had a cane and a cup. And so Jackie's standing there with a cane and the cup. People are walking by because it's right after the theater. And one person throws a quarter in it. And several people threw a quarter at it. And I could hear one of them saying, "It's terrible what happened to him. Look at this." And I said, "Jackie, you got to put the cup away." He said, "Oh, yeah, I wonder why they're throwing money." Anyway, the guy came out again. He gave the cup with the quarters. But life was an adventure with him. You never could tell. And I said, he's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
That appealed to me. And I'll tell you one more story about him. The next day that I met him, when I met him, he said, it was the night off at the theater the next night. So he said, come have dinner with me and Jill. We got to cook or whatever. So I go there. We have a normal dinner because he's saying outrageous things. It just keeps going. It was a duplex. And then I see Jackie get up, and he's walking around the living room and walking upstairs and downstairs, davening. Now, a lot of people don't know what davening is, but it's like cantorial singing.
With a little
I never heard it. Like, people walk around doing this loud, very loud. Jill keeps saying to me, "Ignore him. Don't ignore him. Don't say anything. Just ignore him. Otherwise, we'll get involved in another discussion about this." He was a unique person of a different age, but children loved him. You know, he was the voice of the Aardvark, and
The Simpsons. Raul, I have to ask you a question, and I know, you know, he has such an illustrious career, and you obviously had an incredible friendship with him. I had the opportunity to meet his daughter, Sheba, not too long ago. They kind of had, they were strange, she and him. And
they were strange.
She wrote a beautiful tribute to him, but why were they strange, do you know?
I don't want to be unkind to him.
Of course, no, and I understand that he's just passed, so.
She went on the stage, and she and her mother wrote a play about Jackie, and then she came to the theater one night. He had to get people so that it wasn't a scene, but he supported her.
Mm-hmm.
The best of my recollection, it was a Florida case in the age of adulthood. It's 18 in Florida, New York is 21. And I think he kept paying till she was 21.
Mm.
I don't think he had any legal obligation. But it was unfortunate. But to give you an idea, he died on a Saturday. On Tuesday, I got a letter from a lawyer. So that means he must have been sent the day after he died.
Or maybe
the day before he was. And they're immediately asking about inheritance or money which I think really put the cap on her relationship with him.
Why was it sent to you? Are you representing him in any way at this point?
Well, no, but I had actually met her on a television show or something like that. Her mother, Kidja, was the mother's name.
Yeah.
I guess they knew I was friendly with her, but the mail.
As a lawyer, I guess you've learned to expect anything. You know, given the fact you've seen so many divorces and so many situations with high profile people, I don't think anything surprises you anymore.
Well, I remember when I opened the envelope, because I didn't recognize the lawyer's name at all. I opened the envelope and I was just shaking my head. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
The man died a day before, and
right.
I got this letter on a Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it was. At any rate, listen, you see all these things in life. I wrote a memoir, I got used to people stopping me and saying, you know, I was crying at the end of it, and I didn't know what to say, so I learned. I said, it was that bad, huh? I didn't know what else to say. I subsequently met a famous political figure. I won't mention it. He was in two cabinets of two different presidents. And he called me. He called me and he said, I didn't know the man. And he said, you know, I want to tell you, I picked up the book Friday night and I didn't stop. It was a terrible weekend for me. So,
yeah, you know. You know, Raul, we're at the top of the hour. We have to close. But we really love to hear about that. Would you come back and talk about your life, about your memoir, about all of your cases? And what we want to hear is what you've learned and your parents. It's a fascinating story with Morris and Millie and how you became a divorce attorney. Fascinating stuff.
And okay, we'd love I'm to not have going you back. Anywhere. I've been around a long time. I'm not leaving anywhere.
Yes. Such a pleasure to talk to you, Raul.
So much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was just—it was wonderful hearing all the stories about Jackie. Take care. All right, Lauren.
All right, Alan. We did it. Another one in the books.
We got through the hour. Oh, my goodness. We made it.
We made it, like we always do.
It's good seeing you.
It's good seeing you as well. Yeah. It's like we have a video show too.
I'm going to be off for a couple of weeks, so you're going to.
But
take
no one will know
me.
Because you'll. No the one show will know. Still airs.
The show will be on. Next
it's our little
week.
Secret.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, everyone.